Let me say before Dave starts that to ask each of you guys to put yourself on mute. And so that way there'll be no background noise as Dave speaks to us, okay, and shares. So please do that. And you, I'm sure you probably know at any time if you want to sort of mute your video, you can click stop video and then you'll just go to a blank screen. But the key thing is to be muted when somebody else is talking. All right, Dave, it's all yours.
Hey, Phil, thank you. And I just want to start again by asking everybody to use that reactions button on the bottom of your Zoom screen and give Phil a thumbs up. Thank you for organizing this and all the work he does to keep us all refueled. So, Phil, thanks again.
You're welcome.
And I want to just thank all the regular Refuel guys for allowing me to be part of your group. As some of you know, I started attending in January and got a couple of meetings in, and then we went virtual. But I'm really looking forward to being back with everybody, back in Tyson's again. And again, thanks for allowing me to be part of your group. And kind of a shout out to my friends that have joined remotely, like Steve and Bob in Boston. And it's a high five to you guys, and thanks for joining in. And I'm really excited about sharing the Crossing Your Jordan story with everybody. If you missed last week, just a tiny bit of background. Back in the year 2000, I was the VP of sales and marketing at a software company here in town. And I just, along that journey there, I started feeling like God was calling me into the ministry. And so I went through this process of ultimately resigning from my job in the software business and kind of a step out in faith. Although I really had no plan, I had no sense of exactly what was going to happen. I had no job, and ended up 4 years later on the staff at McLean Bible Church. And that four-year journey between working in the software business and working at the church started to feel like a wilderness, and people started to say to me, man, you're going through the wilderness. And I don't know about you, but I never really studied this part of the Old Testament before in any great detail. I kind of knew a little bit about the journey of the Israelites, but I never really studied it. But when people started saying that to me, I started studying it, and I started to see all these parallels between the lessons that God was teaching the Israelites in their journey and the lessons that he was teaching me in my journey. And so that led to the development of this course that I taught while I worked at McLean called Crossing Your Jordan, and ultimately to the book that I hope you've been able to download. And again, I'm really excited about sharing this story with you. And so a little bit of a recap, perhaps, for those of you. Hey, Phil? Phil?
Yes.
Having a little bit of problem advancing the slides.
Oh.
It's not working. Let me see. Let me try to share again, my friend.
Or try clicking on your screen on the slide, on the F5, on the slide part.
There we go. Okay. Yeah, it was worked last week. I'm not sure what happened. So give me a little grace here as I try to re-go. Thanks for the technical support, Eliyahu. But just by way of introduction, what we're going to be doing in this Crossing Your Jordan series is we're covering about 500 years of history, about 200 chapters of the Bible. And as I mentioned, there's 40 lessons. And to be honest with you, there could have been 400 lessons or maybe even 4,000 lessons. Who knows? This part of the scripture is just rich with lessons that God is teaching people that are as relevant today as they were back thousands of years ago. But I picked the 40 that were most relevant and helpful to me, and I hope they're relevant and helpful to you. And I've organized the 40 lessons into 8 stages of the journey. And so these are the 8 stages, and last week we covered the lessons from Abram's call. This week we're going to talk about the lessons from the wilderness, and you can see how it flows out over the next couple of weeks, ultimately with lessons from crossing your Jordan into the promised land. So let's just, by way of background, talk a little bit about how did the Israelites get to Egypt anyway? Just a quick reminder that Abraham was basically a 75-year-old pagan living in Iraq when God interrupted an ordinary day for him with this extraordinary call, calling him to leave his home and go to a land that I will show you. And last week we talked about how this process of God leading Abraham was a progressive one. God would give Abraham a little bit of instruction, and then Abraham had to obey without knowing the whole journey or the next step. So a little more instruction, then another step, a little more instruction, then another step. And ultimately, Abraham and his family did make it to the promised land, the land of Canaan. And they were there several generations, and then there was a famine. And God used the famine, you remember. God uses what we might think of as bad things to redirect our path. And in this case, he used a famine to redirect the Israelites from the promised land to Egypt. And you remember there was this amazing reunion and reconciliation between Joseph and the brothers, and the family moved to Egypt and enjoyed a period of prosperity there while Joseph was the prime minister. But then what happened? Well, the scriptures tell us that Joseph died, and then a new king came in that didn't really know all about Joseph and saw the Israelites as a threat and then enslaved them. And so that's how the Israelites got to Egypt, and that's how ultimately they ended up being slaves. So let's get into part two, the Exodus. We're going to cover six lessons today, 5 to 10. It's about 430 years of history, probably the first half of the book of Exodus, and we're going to move the Israelites from bondage in Egypt to freedom in their journey ultimately to the promised land. And so lesson five, you need to learn to pray without ceasing. Let me read from Exodus 2. The Israelites groaned in their slavery and cried out, and their cry for help because of their slavery went up to God. And God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. And so, remember, the Israelites had been enslaved for 400 years.
I just got it.
Sorry, we got somebody we need to mute, please. And the Israelites had been enslaved for 400 years. And so if they'd been praying that whole time, the Bible doesn't really tell us about it. But I'm going to assume positively that they have been praying for God to release them from their oppression, release them from the slavery. And ultimately, God answered that prayer. First, he brought Moses as a deliverer, and you know the story about how God brought Moses back from his first 40 years in the wilderness, and ultimately Moses and Aaron confronted Pharaoh. They confronted Pharaoh, who refused to relent. God sent the 10 plagues, perhaps you remember, plague number 10 being the killing of the firstborn and the establishment of the Passover. And all of this happened, but God raised up Moses to be a deliverer, and I believe a lot of that is in response to their prayer. As I mentioned, for myself, when I left the software business, I all of a sudden found myself in this period of wilderness. And I had never really been a person that spent a lot of time in prayer before. Frankly, prayer was probably the most difficult part of the Christian life for me. I don't really sit still very well, and it was a difficult thing for me to do. But God used my time in Egypt and my time in the journey to the promised land ultimately to learn how to pray. And one of the things about this coronavirus is that the scriptures are clear that when their hardship comes, people reach out to God. And I don't know about you, but I think that we're seeing an amazing awakening here as God is using this difficulty of the coronavirus and the shutdown and the nervousness about the careers and the economy and my finances and everything else. And people are praying really at unprecedented levels. And I think that's a good thing. So lesson five, we have to learn to pray without ceasing. Lesson six. We need to learn to accept God's ways. So I'm reading here from Exodus 13. And just to put this in context, between lesson five and lesson lesson six is when the 10 plagues happened. So now we're reading after the 10 plagues. When Pharaoh let the people go, God did not lead them on the road through the Philistine country, though that was shorter. For God said, if they face war, they might change their minds and return to Egypt. So God led the people around by the desert road towards the Red Sea. And so when God led the Israelites out of Egypt, he did so in what I'll call the road less traveled, in a very unexpected direction. And let's put this in context. The Bible says there was about 600 men in the Israelites. And so that's probably, let's say, about 2 million men, women, and children. And so, again, some context. Think about that's like the entire city of Washington, D.C. And God's going to ask them essentially to walk about 200 miles. So now put this in your mind. The entire city of Washington, D.C. is going to walk to New York. That's what we're talking about. The entire city of Washington, D.C. Pharaoh lets them go. Moses says, all right, we're going. We're walking to New York. Imagine that. That's kind of what we're dealing with. But right away, God redirected their path. He didn't take them down the path that would have led right along the Mediterranean. That would have been the short road. He took them south and redirected them towards the Red Sea. If you look at a map of this part of the Middle East, you'll know you can get from Ramses, Egypt to Jericho without crossing the Red Sea or the Jordan. But God redirected his people in a unique way. And when I stepped out and resigned from my software company, I just assumed that God would take me on the fast lane to ministry. That I'd, you know, maybe take a month or two off, and then doors would start opening, and there I would be. Well, it didn't work that way. As I mentioned, I was felt like it was 4 years in the wilderness. And so right away, I had to learn that God's ways are not our ways. And frankly, I had to learn that one the hard way. This was a very difficult lesson for me to process because, you know, I'm an impatient person, you know, go, go, go. Come on, God, I stepped out in faith. What's this, you know, time in the wilderness all about? Why are we doing this? Why are you leading me this way? And frankly, I found it a difficult part of the process. Seven, you need to learn to follow God. Fast forward here to Exodus 13:21. By day, the Lord went ahead of them in a pillar of cloud to guide them on their way, and by night, a pillar of fire to give them light, so they could travel by day or night. Neither the pillar of cloud by day nor the pillar of fire by night left in front of the place of the people. This is an amazing thing to me. God directs the Israelites and shows up in this miraculous way with this pillar of cloud and a pillar of fire. And so miraculously, God demonstrated his leadership of his people and led them in this unique way with the pillar of cloud and pillar of fire. Now, I don't know about you, but it's not been my experience. God has never shown up in a pillar of cloud or a pillar of fire. When I left the software business and I'm trying to find my way towards the ministry, there was no pillar of cloud. There was no pillar of fire. And so I used to joke, I took the road less traveled and now I'm lost, you know? And so it took me a long time to really learn how to follow God through this period of my journey. And for me, that involved I call them spiritual Q-tips. I had to clean out my ears so that I could learn to hear God. I had to spend hours in Bible study, in prayer, something I'd never really done at that level of intensity before. And so I found that as I spent time more in study and more time in prayer and fasting, that eventually God started to reveal to me. And it was that small, still voice that we all talk about. It wasn't a pillar of fire or a pillar of cloud. But anyway, he did lead me, and I had to learn how to follow him. Lesson 8, We need to learn to take risk. Learn to take risk. Exodus 14, 21 to 22. Then Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and all that night, the Lord drove the sea back with a strong east wind and turned it into dry land. The waters divided, and the Israelites went through the sea on dry ground with a wall of water on the right and on the left. Now, we all know this part of the story, perhaps. God uses Moses to part the Red Sea. They get to the edge of the Red Sea, and they're stuck. And at this point, Pharaoh changes his mind and sends 600 of his best chariots and his best men chasing him. And so you can imagine that the Israelites can feel the approaching chariots. They can feel the stress of that their enemy coming to attack them. And then God miraculously uses Moses to part the Red Sea. And we all know that part of the story. But now put yourself in the shoes of the Israelites, or in the sandals, if you will, of the Israelites. Because they had to trust that God would leave the water with the walls on the right and on the left. And that was a significant leap of faith at this point in their journey, if you can imagine. You know, they spent 400 years baking bricks, and all of a sudden this happens to them in a period of months. And so they had to learn to take risk and trust that God was going to leave those walls of water on the right and on the left. And I think for me, leaving my Egypt also involved taking risk. Leaving my job in the software business was a significant risk, especially as I mentioned to you, I didn't have another job. I had no idea what I was going to be doing. I didn't know how long it was going to take me to find a job. Of course, I had some savings, but it felt like a huge, huge risk. And what I learned is that God is still in the water parting business. God is still in the business of then opening doors. And then it gets to the point where God opens the doors and you've got a decision to make. You've got to say, am I going to go through that door? Am I going to take the risk? How am I going to handle it? You know, but one thing's for sure, God rarely brings these new opportunities into your comfort zone. If you have a sense that God's calling you, he rarely calls people into their comfort zone. So this notion of taking risk for God is an important lesson. The other part of the story here is, of course, the role of Moses. And I just wanted to say that, you know, God uses people like Moses to part the waters for us. And so there might be somebody in your life today who's that Moses for you. He's calling you to answer God's call and to step out into a new opportunity, a new role, a new ministry, a new calling. And so there may be a Moses in your life that's asking you to step into that dry riverbed. And conversely, you might be the Moses for someone else. It might be you that God's using to raise your arms and part the water for someone else. Lesson 9, you have to learn to put the past behind you. Put the past behind you. Exodus 14. Moses stretched out his hand over the sea, and at daybreak, the sea went back to its place. The Egyptians were fleeing towards it, and the Lord swept them into the sea. The water flowed back and covered the chariots and the horsemen and the entire army of Pharaoh. So 2 million Israelites reached dry ground on the other side of the Red Sea. But surely they could still hear the approaching hoofbeats of Pharaoh's army coming to attack them, with Pharaoh leading the charge. Okay, and remember, the Israelites had no military training. They weren't prepared to fight. They had no weapons. And then God miraculously, for the second time, asks Moses to raise his arms and crashes the water on top of Pharaoh's finest. Hundreds of thousands of soldiers washing up on shore. Not one of them survived. And so the process of leaving Egypt involves putting the past behind you. For me, I didn't realize how many things from my Egypt I was still kind of enslaved to. I was still kind of enslaved to the idea that it's good to have a salary. Still kind of enslaved to the idea of my identity coming from my corporate position. My identity came from the title that was on my business card. My identity came from my stock options or my financial portfolio. And I got to tell you, God started wiping all of those out big time. It was kind of like the water crashing on top of Pharaoh's army, wiping out the things that enslaved the Israelites. God was doing the same thing for me, wiping out the things that were holding me back, the things that were that I was maybe unknowingly enslaved to. And leaving Egypt is about breaking free from the things that have enslaved us, from the people who have oppressed us, by the habits that have controlled us and the thoughts that perhaps have taunted us. And so God wants us to look forward, okay, to answer his call, to live as a new creature, to be transformed by the renewing of your mind. And that process involves the lesson of learning to put the past behind you. All right, lesson 10, learn to trust God. You know, a lot's happened over the last 6 months for the Israelites. They went from 400 years in captivity, not much happening. And all of a sudden, Moses shows up. There's the confrontation with Pharaoh. There's the 10 plagues. There's the pillar of cloud and the pillar of fire. There's the leading them in the most unexpected way. And you got to imagine the uncertainty about their future, leaving their houses behind, leaving everything they knew, leaving their vocations behind. Then they get to the Red Sea. God parts the Red Sea. They make it through, and then God closes the Red Sea on top of Pharaoh and the Egyptian army. That's a lot to process in 6 months. And so Exodus 14:31, when the Israelites saw the mighty hand of God displayed against the Egyptians, the people feared the Lord and put their trust in God. And this must have been an amazing experience as they there now. This is like day one of their new life. Day one. And of course, they didn't know yet that it was going to be 40 years in the wilderness. So here they are, they get to the other side, and they're rejoicing and proclaiming and declaring their trust in God. And so, you know, the thing we're going to learn over the next 30 lessons is that's really easy to say and really hard to do. Unfortunately, the moral of the story here with the Israelites is this recurring pattern of proclaiming their trust in God and then doubting and disobeying. Proclaiming their trust in God and then doubting and disobeying. And, you know, if I'm honest, that's a lot of my pattern as well. Because it's easy to, with our lips, proclaim that we trust God. And it's a whole lot harder to trust God when the mortgage payment's there in front of us and there's no money to pay it. And so we had to learn to trust God. And, you know, one of the things that I say about these 10 lessons and the 40 in general, is that we have to continuously relearn these. Phil and I were joking earlier as we were getting ready this morning that, you know, welcome to the meeting of the Slow Learners Club. And these lessons, I think, we have to continuously learn and relearn and relearn. And so there you go. We had 6 lessons today. We have to learn to pray without ceasing. We have to accept God's ways. God's ways are not our ways. And most of the time, God's ways are unusual. They don't make sense on a human level to us. It's not the way, the road of the Philistines. It's another road. And we need to learn to accept that. We have to learn to follow God. I, for one, would love to have that pillar of cloud and pillar of fire. But, you know, short of that, you're going to have to learn to follow God. You have to learn to hear his voice and really discern where he's leading you. You need to learn to take risk. Because after all, you know, leaving Egypt is about putting the things behind you and stepping out in faith. And ultimately, we have to learn to trust God. And that's a lesson that, as I mentioned, I think we have to continuously relearn. And so just a quick reminder, if you have any thoughts or comments or questions or suggestions, there's my email address, david@daveramos.com. As Phil mentioned, we got the handouts and the recordings. As soon as I edit them, will be posted on the crossingyourjordan.com. And at this point, we're going to turn it over to our small group discussions. And to help us get started, we work to create some questions that your small groups can use to discuss the lessons and how they might apply to you. So which lesson did you relate to the most and why? Is there something that you've been praying for, perhaps for a really long time, that we can join in prayer with you, that God might release you from that thing that's been burdening you? You know, has God been leading you on the road less traveled? Do you feel like there's, you know, things in your life that where God's leading and how he's directing are maybe not making sense on a human level? You know, where's God been parting the waters? Are you the Moses for someone else, or is there another Moses parting the waters for you? Are there any areas of your life where you're in bondage? And it's easy to develop these little areas of our life that are in bondage. And just like the God used the waters of the Red Sea to eliminate the things that held the Israelites in bondage, perhaps there's a similar story for you. And then which of God's promises are you trusting for him to deliver today? And so with that, Phil, I'll let you turn us into our small groups. And again,